Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. People grow older and so do economic expansions. For this week's Morning Macro, we look at the current U.S. economic expansion phase with Professor Joe Santos. He is Professor of Economics, Dyckhaus Scholar of Money, Banking, and Regulation at Ness School of Management and Economics at South Dakota State University. He's joining us from the Janine Basinger Studio right now. And you can find and follow along Morning Macro online at schooled.blog.com. You spell out the first dot, so schooled.blog. And Joe, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori.
All right, so it's only a phase. Let's talk a little bit, let's set the stage a little bit with this, the phases of the business cycle. What are we talking about here overall?
Sure. So economists, macroeconomists spend a lot of time, particularly ever since the Great Depression, focusing on what we call the business cycle. And these are these irregular, sometimes we say non-periodic, so you don't know when they're coming, fluctuations in aggregate economic activity. So these are changes in economic activity that are felt broadly throughout the economy. So, if the automobile industry is having a bad quarter, that in and of itself would not indicate a phase of the business cycle. But if we see that sort of economic activity weakening throughout the economy, everything from manufacturing to services to labor markets to retail sales and so on, then we would start to think about a potential phase of a business cycle. And there are four of them. And so there's the expansion that we're in right now. Expansions peak, and so we call that phase the peak. And then they turn into contractions, or popularly known as recessions, and then they head down into a trough. So those are the four phases of the cycle. And as you said, right now, the U.S. economy is in the expansion phase. That is, generally speaking, economic activity broadly reflected throughout the economy has been growing over time. And it's been doing this now for 124 months. And so we're now in the 125th month. So it is an older recession. The question is, of course, whether it's just old or older.
Right. So it reminds me of people who have children. They say, oh, they're, 6 months old or 8 months old or 27 months old. So the 124, we watch this very closely week by week, month by month.
We do, because we focus a lot on the expansions, because, of course, what you're wondering secretly is,
right,
are we at the peak, right? Because if we're at the peak, then it's the downturn, and then what comes next is the contraction. So we do focus a lot on this. As for how we define it, this is maybe a little goofy to listeners, but there is a private, not-for-profit research organization in Cambridge, Massachusetts, called the National Bureau of Economic Research, and the so-called NBER, as we affectionately refer to it, has a business cycle dating committee. I'm not making this up. And these are folks who look at the broad features of the macroeconomy on a quarterly basis and essentially determine whether, in their informed judgment, the economy is indeed at a turning point, at a peak or a trough. So the last time for the U.S. economy that the NBER identified a turning point, it was a trough, and it was June 2009. So ever since that trough, we have been in expansion, again, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research. But as macroeconomists like to joke, a recession is when your neighbor's out of work and a depression is when you're out of work. So there is quite a bit of subjectivity attached to these terms. But I think it's fair to say that everyone right now in macroeconomics agrees with the NBER's take on our current phase of the cycle.
All right. So the peaks and the troughs, the highs and the lows, those are shorter periods of time then, or not?
Yes, they are. So the economy peaks, and it usually, we identify the peak, and then that economic activity is not repeated again, typically. And so what you do see is a reduction in economic activity. Same with the trough. There's a picture there on Schooled, folks, to take a look at, where you get this sort of this dip in economic activity, and then it bottoms out June 2009, and then it doesn't stay there. It could, in principle, but it doesn't. In that case, it just begins to lift again. Those are relatively short-lived periods, and then we also notice a difference between the life cycle of an expansion and a contraction thankfully. That is, in practice, no need for this to be true in principle, but in practice, expansions last longer than contractions. So that's nice. In the case of the United States, if you look at, say, the last 40 or 50 or 60 years, essentially the post-World War II period, as we call it, expansions have averaged something like 70-ish months, whereas contractions have averaged something like 6 to 9 months. So expansions are longer than contractions, and peaks and troughs are shorter than both.
Is that because of monetary policy efforts, people sort of pulling the puppet strings a little bit to make changes?
That's a good question. So the expansions in principle, that is, according to business cycle theory, and there's a lot of business cycle theory out there, and it doesn't all agree. But what it does tend to agree on is that, at least in principle, the end of a contraction or the end of a recession is not predetermined by the structure of the economy. So whether this is an appropriate way to think about business cycles or not, the way we think about them is you have the underlying structure of the economy. I think of maybe like a building structure. And then you have what we think of as shocks that buffet that building. So maybe, a random electrical fire, let's say. So that isn't in the design of the building. The building is not designed to catch fire in, say, 36 months. but nevertheless, such an event could occur. And so that's how we think about the sort of the propagation of a business cycle, that the economy is expanding. And as you say, monetary policy, let's say, is appropriately accommodative. And then something happens, the electrical fire. Now, it's interesting you bring up monetary policy. In many of the post-war expansions that the U.S. has experienced, it actually has been a monetary policy shock that has created the downturn. So I remember a few weeks back, you noticed that very high inflation in the 1970s and early 80s. Well, the way the Federal Reserve dealt with that was to really tighten monetary policy. It solved the inflation problem. It also, unfortunately, provoked a downturn in the economy that created two very quick recessions in the 1980s. So as monetary policy folks like to say, expansions don't die of old age. They're often murdered, and they can be murdered by policy. Well-intended policy, but nevertheless, policy that creates its own sort of shock, its own sort of electrical fire, if you will, that then sort of runs its course through the broader features of the economy and actually creates a recession. So we can have that kind of shock, but we also have other more internal to the economy shock. So a financial crisis, a speculative bubble, an oil price shock, for example, which these days could mean oil prices fall, given the U.S. is such a producer of oil. But that used to mean that oil prices would rise and create havoc in the U.S. economy, and so on.
So let's talk about this current expansion. It's relatively long. And what else do we know about what's happening right now in this expansion? We're sort of looking at it while we're living it.
Yeah, that's right. And it has two interesting features that I think of as sort of offsetting features and somewhat off-putting. So you've got the expansion. So if you look at, let's say, figure two on the blog, you'll see this increase going from bottom left to top right, a line just demonstrating that GDP has been growing ever since that trough. But if you look closely at that line and I compare it to nine other expansions that we've experienced since the Second World War, you notice the slope, if you will, the growth rate is actually very slow. So it stands out, this expansion does, because it's long-lived. It also is an expansion that hasn't been attended by very high growth in GDP or any of the other macro features of the economy. So it's exceptionally long. It's also exceptionally weak. And again, by that I mean we have growth, but we don't have growth at the rates that we were accustomed to having, let's say in the 1990s expansion or the 1960s expansion, where really average annual growth was nearly double what we experienced during this expansion. So it sure beats a recession, don't get me wrong, but it's not the most robust economic expansion we've had, for sure.
All right, so this is going to be kind of a silly question, but if you could pick between long and relatively weak and robust and shorter, you know, compare those two and say, you know, what are the advantages of either one and the disadvantages? Because it seems like if you just have a little patience, that tortoise is going to beat the hare, and that's probably okay.
Yeah, I think that would be the
conventional. See what an optimist I am?
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, it's sort of like saying, you know, would you like a small electrical fire? We just macroeconomists, policy wonks, we just prefer no electrical fire. So,
right.
Very little good comes out of a contraction. We would prefer this expansion to one that were to not last as long. Recessions in all seriousness could be very problematic. And by the way, the weak growth that we see during this expansion, there are a lot of explanations for what's going on. But I think it's safe to say that the contraction that preceded this expansion, is every expansion is preceded by a contraction, was, of course, the Great Recession. And it was great in the sense that the destruction, if you will, to the macroeconomy was significant. And again, if folks take a look at Schooled, they'll see these pictures of these big dippers, if you will, where the economy is dipping down and losing economic activity, essentially, because of the financial crisis and the recession. And if you compare that recession to others in the post-World War II period, Great Recession really stands out. So given what we escaped in that Great Recession, I think a 10-year expansion is phenomenal, even if it is at relatively weak growth.
Mm-hmm. So I remember some of the conversations we had, even on this program, about South Dakota's economy, not being impacted by the Great Recession in some of the same ways that other states were because of how we handle our financial business here in South Dakota. Is that just politics talking, or is there truth to that, where there can be a U.S. economic contraction and some places are impacted by it more than others because of how they look at their own state budget, for example?
Sure. Yeah, this is a really interesting question, because when you think about, an aggregate economic fluctuation of some sort, the term aggregate suggests that this is sort of like a wave that just washes itself over the economy. And so every industry, all economic activity in that economy is affected the same way by that wave. In reality, of course, that's not the case. There's what the macroeconomists like to call heterogeneity. That is, not every state, not every region will experience the fluctuation in economic activity the same way. This is where the informed judgment comes in with the National Bureau of Economic Research. It'd be a lot easier if we all experienced it the same way. And so South Dakota is an example of an economy that, during the financial crisis and the Great Recession that followed it, our state economy was not nearly as adversely affected as the macroeconomy more generally. And that has a lot to do, again, with the idiosyncrasies, if you will, of a state economy. And in our case, you have a state economy that is heavily comprised of agriculture. And at that point in the financial crisis, agricultural prices, which essentially drive economic activity directly and then through indirect knock-on effects in the state, were actually relatively strong. So, we see this throughout the country because, again, the sort of the composition of industry and so forth in one state or the other just really doesn't mimic the composition of industries in the economy more generally. And so it doesn't feel the cycle the same way. On a more negative note, for example, right now, there's quite a bit of speculation that, for example, Michigan is probably in something that we would call a recession if the economy more broadly were experiencing what Michigan's experiencing. So there's an example of this in the other direction.
Right. Is the U.S. unique in how our business cycles work, or is this something you see reflected across the globe?
Business cycles are not uniquely American. Having said that, at the moment, we are, I'm going to qualify this, we're our expansion is longer than most in the world right now. On average, our expansions since the Second World War have lasted longer. And that relationship between expansion length and contraction length for the U.S., it's a really big difference. Throughout the rest of the world, not so much. I should say Australia is an interesting example. So the listeners are going to want me to mention Australia, so here it goes. They have had tendencies toward recession since the 1990s, but there's a lot of debate, again, informed judgment, as to whether any of those tendencies really indicated recession. If you take the view that those tendencies were not great enough to indicate recession, they've been around in an expansion phase for about 27 years. So they are the exception right now. If you sort of put them aside, again, a very unique economy, resource-based and so forth, very much supporting China's growth over the last few decades. If you set them aside, then the U.S. is quite unique in terms of the length of this current expansion and more generally the length of this lengths of its expansions since the Second World War. But Australia comes up a lot because it's a very interesting case right now.
You mentioned that expansions don't die of old age, they're murdered. Do we see anything, you know, coming up on the horizon that we're particularly tuned into, that if this happens, you know, if the trade war continues or if, you know, something, you know, what do we see shock? Can we predict the shocks for us right now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in some sense, and I don't mean this to be sort of cute about this, but in some sense, because they're shocks, you know, by definition, we don't know they're coming.
Yeah.
But it's a very good question because, you know, we know what they'll probably look like. We just don't know which one it's going to be. Again, it could be financial excesses, speculation of some sort. It could be resource prices moving in one direction or another that has deleterious effects on large swaths of the economy. But policy is interesting because there, too, they are shocks. So we don't know when they're going to hit. But we are ultimately in charge of policy in a way that we're not of, say, natural resource shocks. And so, yes, the trade protectionism in general has never been kind to economic expansions, again, nor has excessively tight monetary policy. Of those two, I think right now the Federal Reserve is acutely aware of its murderous tendencies since the Second World War and is very sensitive to this and is in a sort of a mindset of accommodating the expansion and doing no harm. So that's great. And there's no inflation to worry about, so they can afford to be that accommodative. Protectionism is of the two, I would say, in my just informed judgment, trade protectionism is the greater of the two threats right now to the expansion.
Joe Santos, always a pleasure, always informative. The blog, you can follow along and recap and then see the graphs that Professor Santos has created as well. That's at schooled.blog.com, and we will put a link up on our website after the program as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Laurie.